Time for Michigan's newest sports talk show, Mitten Madness.
And here he goes. Defense win championship.
Michigan sports talk from here in Battle Creek. The latest stories, the biggest games, all across the Mitten State.
That's not something to play with.
Streaming live and on demand on the 95.3 WBCK app. Your host, Dejon Hughes.
Welcome into Mid Madness here on 95.3 WBCK. Good morning on this Saturday morning. Hopefully you guys are doing as good as I am. Had a wonderful Thanksgiving, and I hope that you did as well. Enjoying all the amazing food, the family time, and of course, the football that went down. We're going to get into all of that. Of course, we're going to talk about the Lions. We're going to talk about Michigan, Michigan State, Western football. We're going to talk about the Red Wings. Then we're going to get into the Pistons before we talk Michigan and Michigan State basketball. Then we'll get into some miscellaneous sports action happening in Michigan before we talk about the college football playoff. And then we'll get into our picks. As always, I'm doing fantastic. As you can imagine, as a Packers fan, I'm feeling great after Thanksgiving. I got to eat amazing food, hang out with my family, and not only did I watch a Packers win over the Lions, I also got to proudly boast and wear my new Jaire Alexander green Packers jersey all day long after that win. So I am feeling great going into this weekend. More huge things are coming in as Michigan basketball played great earlier this week, which we're going to dive into later on in the show. Michigan State basketball looks good as well. Michigan has a huge football game coming up, which we'll get into that game, and we'll get into the Big Ten championship / playoff implications that come from that game and the following games as well. And then the only sad part of the week was the Pistons, but I'll touch on that in just a few moments as well. Now that we've gotten through the obligatories, it's time for us to talk about some Lions football. So the Lions, well, it's been tough sledding for them the last couple of games. So we go back to Sunday. They played the Giants. That game ended up going into overtime. And here is how it went down. Jameis Winston, 18 of 36, two touchdowns, an interception for 366 passing yards. And they had Tyrone Tracy Jr. go for 20 carries and 62 rushing yards. Wendell Robinson had 156 receiving yards, nine receptions, and a touchdown. Darius Alexander had two sacks, and Dane Belton had nine tackles, four of them being solo. Meanwhile, on the other side, Jared Goff goes 28 of 42 for 279 passing yards, two touchdowns, and an interception. Jahmyr Gibbs goes for 15 carries, 219 rushing yards, and two TDs. Amon-Ra St. Brown, nine receptions, 149 receiving yards, and a touchdown. Aiden Hutchinson had one sack, and Jack Campbell goes for 11 tackles, five of them being solo. The Giants had 517 total yards in comparison to the 494 for the Lions, one turnover apiece. The Giants had 25 first downs in comparison to 23 for the Lions. The Lions had nine penalties for 81 yards. Giants only seven for 59. Giants were 50%, 8 for 16 on third down, while the Lions were just 5 of 12. And then you had the Giants go 1 for 3 on fourth down. The Lions didn't attempt a fourth down conversion in this entire game, which is interesting to say. The Lions went 2 for 4 in the red zone. Giants went 1 for 3. They were just the Giants actually had the ball about 10 more minutes than the Lions did in this game. That was at Ford Field, but the Giants covered the spread. The over did hit in the 50.5, but the Lions cashed in on the money line. Wendell Robinson got things open in this game with a 39-yard passing reception from Jameis Winston in the first quarter, put the Giants up 7. Then Younghoe Koo had a 21-yard field goal as time expired in the first quarter to put the Giants up 10-0. Amon-Ra St. Brown strikes back with an 11-yard touchdown reception from Jared Goff. Isaiah Hodgins then cashes in for the Giants with a 12-yard reception pass from Jameis Winston. Score is now 17-7 Giants. Then here comes Jahmyr Gibbs. 3-yard touchdown reception from Jared Goff has the Lions down just 3. Younghoe Koo, with 38 seconds left, casts a field goal to put the Giants up 6. And then here comes Jake Bates right before the end of the second quarter, going into halftime. Cashes in a field goal. 20-17 was then the score of this game going into halftime. No one scores in the third quarter yet again for a Lions game, which is starting to become a trend for them. That's both good and bad, if you ask me. I mean, it's good that you're able to keep teams off of the scoreboard for an entire quarter, but it's also bad that you're not scoring for that entire quarter. Here comes the fourth quarter. Jameis Winston catches a 33-yard touchdown reception from Gunnar Olszewski. And then Jahmyr Gibbs cashes in after that with a 49-yard touchdown run. Have the Lions back down 3, 27-24. 28 seconds left in the fourth. Jake Bates ties things up. 59-yard field goal, sending it to overtime. Then here comes Jahmyr Gibbs with a 69-yard rushing touchdown on the first play of overtime to put the Lions ahead. And then the Giants did nothing with it when they had the ball, giving the Lions a slim 7-point victory in overtime after a game that literally looked like it could have been awful for the Lions. It looked like it could have gone very bad for them, but they were able to squeeze that out. And then they had another big test coming up, which everybody knew was coming, because how often do the Lions not play on Thanksgiving? This time, another divisional game for them, an opponent they had already seen this year in the Green Bay Packers. And this is how it went down. It was another close game. Jordan Love, 18 of 30 for 234 passing yards, 4 tutties through the air. Josh Jacobs goes for 83 rushing yards on 17 carries. Dontavian Wicks had 94 receiving yards on 6 receptions and 2 touchdowns. Micah Parsons had 2.5 sacks. And Isaiah McDuffie with 12 tackles, 7 of them being solo. For the Lions, Jared Goff still had a good day from the field. I mean, great day in the office for him. 20 of 26, 256 passing yards, 2 touchdowns. Jahmyr Gibbs goes 20 carries for 68 yards. Jameson Williams, 7 receptions, 144 receiving yards, and a touchdown. No sacks for the Lions, but Brian Branch had 10 tackles, 7 of them being solo. Key thing to note is Amon-Ra St. Brown did go down with an injury in the first quarter, which did change a lot of things for this game. Devondre Stacey also went down with looked to be a pretty serious injury for the Packers later on in this game. So a very hard-fought game that saw bloodshed on both sides. 359 total yards for the Packers, 352 for the Lions. No turnovers in this game at all. 20 first downs for the Lions, 18 for the Packers. Only 3 penalties for 20 yards for the Packers, 5 for 22 for the Lions. 6 of 12 on third down were the Packers, 8 for 13 were the Lions. 3 for 3 on fourth down was Green Bay. Meanwhile, the Lions went 0 for 2. Green Bay goes 2 for 2, 100% in the red zone. Lions 2 for 3, and possession time was just about even. Scoring got started with Brandon McManus, a 45-yard field goal in the first quarter, only points of the first quarter. Then Dontavian Wicks comes back with a 22-yard pass reception from Jordan Love, which many people felt was questionable. Quickly reviewed, they said the play stands. Touchdown is touchdown. It was questionable. As a Packers fan, I'll say it was questionable, but they called it what they called it. Packers were up 10-0. David Montgomery comes back with a 3-yard touchdown run for an answer. 10-7 Green Bay. Green Bay pops back. Romeo Doubs, 2-yard reception pass from Jordan Love for a touchdown. 17-7 Green Bay. Jameson Williams, 22-yard touchdown reception from Jared Goff. 17-14 going into the half. Christian Watson comes out, 51-yard touchdown pass from Jordan Love, puts the Packers back up 10. Isaac Tesla, 17-yard touchdown pass from Jared Goff. Boom, Lions are back down 3. Here comes Dontavian Wicks again, a 1-yard touchdown pass from Jordan Love, puts the Packers back up 10. Jake Bates gets a field goal with 2:59 left in the fourth to put the Lions down 7. Those were the last points of the game, only points in the fourth quarter, and the Packers escape with a 7-point victory. So now the Lions will have some time to breathe and think, but they're 7-5, so things are looking uphill for them in the long run if they want to make the playoffs. Currently, the Lions are the 8th seed, so they're right outside the playoffs at 7-5, but we do know that their schedule does not get any easier moving forward for the Lions. So it's going to be tough for them to go out and steal a victory. I mean, the Cowboys are playing decent this year. The Rams are the best team in the NFC at the moment. The Steelers have a winning record. The Vikings are tough. They're not an easy win, but they're not necessarily a loss either. And you got the Bears, who have been playing fantastic football at the end of the year. So pretty much Lions have to almost win out if they want to steal a spot, or they're going to need some help elsewhere in the league. And that's where things get tough for the Detroit Lions. But they don't play again until the 4th. So they have until next Thursday to rest. So they have a full week of rest before they have to take on the Cowboys. Taking a little quick peek at that game while we have some time here. 62.6% chance for the Lions to win this game. 37.1% chance for Dallas. Lions are 3-point favorites. 54.5 sits on the over-under. Negative 170 for the Lions, plus 145 for Dallas. Dallas has some injuries. Trayvon Diggs, Jonathan Mingo, Perrion Winfrey. Obviously, Amon-Ra St. Brown with his ankle injury joins things for the Lions. That's most notable. The Lions are 2-3 in their last five. The Cowboys are 3-2 with wins over Kansas City and Philadelphia in that 2-3. They do have a loss to Arizona and Denver in that stretch as well. But, I mean, it's tough sledding for the Lions, who beat the Giants and the Commanders but lost to the Eagles, the Packers, and the Vikings in that same stretch of time. It's going to be on Prime Video 8:15, and I believe we're going to be playing that here on WBCK as well. So check that out in either form or both forms at the same time. When we come back from the break, we're going to touch in on Michigan, Michigan State, Western College football as things are getting crazy all over the place. But that's when we come back from the break with more Mid Madness on 95.3 WBCK.
95.3 WBCK.
Welcome back into Mid Madness here on 95.3 WBCK. I'm back. It's your host, Dejon Hughes, and we got an hour, or well, we got 2 hours this time, another one of those No Coaches Corner weekends. So we have tons to dive into. For this segment, we're going to be talking about Michigan, Michigan State, and Western Michigan on the gridiron. We're going to start with that last team that I just mentioned, the Western Michigan Broncos, and what a season it has been for them. Started off with a 23-6 loss to Michigan State. Then a 33-30 loss to North Texas. A 38-0 loss to number nine ranked Illinois, and then a 14-13 crazy victory over Toledo, a 47-14 smacking of Rhode Island, 21-3 easy handle victory against UMass on the road, 42-0 belt to Ball State, and then their first adversity in the middle of the season. They dropped a game to Miami of Ohio. The Redhawks took them down 26-17. Since then, nothing but dubs. Took down Central Michigan in the battle for the cannon, 24-21. Chips, you gotta get packing. Bobcats, they came to town next. Ohio handled them 17-13 in a close victory as well. Then went on the road to take on Northern Illinois, 35-19. No problems there. Then they had to take on the Eagles, Eastern Michigan, to see if they could wrap up that Michigan MAC trophy. And surely they did. 31-21, Western Michigan Broncos are Michigan MAC champions. And now they're looking to be MAC conference champions as they will be playing next weekend, Saturday, December 6th, noon, ESPN, in the MAC championship game against who knows? Who knows? Why am I saying who knows? Well, I'm about to tell you in just a second as I pull up the standings for the conference. Here's the MAC conference solidified in the game. No questions. Number one seed, Western Michigan, 7-1 in the conference. And then here comes the issue. Ohio Bobcats, they won earlier today as I record this on Friday against the Buffalo Bulls, which drops Buffalo to 4-4 in the conference. Ohio's now 6-2. The problem is Toledo is 5-2. Miami of Ohio is 5-2. Central Michigan is 5-2. They could all win their games this week. I'm going to check that in just a moment because I do believe that Toledo and Miami of Ohio play each other. They do not. Toledo and Central play each other. So, boom, one of them is automatically out of the mix. The loser of that game, no longer in contention for the MAC championship game. Meanwhile, Miami of Ohio is going to be playing Ball State, which Ball State currently is 3-4 in the conference, 4-7 on the year. Not quite as good as Miami of Ohio. So it's going to be interesting to see how the tiebreakers play out, to see who will be taking on the Broncos at Ford Field next Saturday for that conference championship game. But man, other than Miami of Ohio, there isn't a conference team that has even really given them any, well, I shouldn't say that. Toledo gave them some problems earlier in the season. Obviously, that rivalry game with Central was going to be an issue. And then Ohio was a tough out as well. But it doesn't mean that Western can't handle their business going into that MAC conference championship game. They get to kick back and watch some football all day today, as you will be doing, to see how these tiebreakers will play out. And then they'll get to go to work after that, as they'll then know their opponent and who they'll be taking on later this week over in Ford Field. I personally hope it's the Central Michigan Chips. That game would feed families for decades. Decades. There would be so many people there. It would be an amazing game. The energy would be unreal, and I would be down to see a second battle for the Cannon after what we saw earlier this year in that 24-21 win for the Broncos. So that's something to keep our eye on as we're watching football later today, as what's happening in the MAC, who will Western Michigan be taking on when they go to Ford Field to play next week in the MAC championship game. But now that we're through that, let's talk about something else on the other side of things. Well, Michigan State, their season has been quite different than the Broncos. They started with a 23-6 win over the Broncos. Then they managed to squeeze out a crazy overtime victory over Boston College, 42-40. Then they were able to beat Youngstown State, an FCS team, 41-24. Giving up 24 points to an FCS team, not the best. As we can see, that did spell out to be some problems for them later on in the season. The very next week, they take on USC, lose 45-31. Their next game at Nebraska, well, granted, they were at USC, so that's not terrible. On the road against Nebraska, they lose 38-27. At home against UCLA, 38-13. On the road against Indiana, 38-13. At home against number 25 Michigan, lose 31-20. On the road at Minnesota, you lose 23-20 in overtime. Heartbreaker. Penn State at home, technically at Ford Field, you lose 28-10. That was at home. You lose 28-10. Then you play Iowa this week against at Ford Field, and you lose 20-17 in a heartbreaker of a game, which means your last chance to win a conference game in the Big Ten this year and a last chance to win a football game at all this season is against Maryland at home. Coming up later today, 7 p.m. game will also be on FS1, but that's their last chance to win a game. Their season is over once that football game is over. Once that clock hits 0000, they got four zeros across, it's over for Michigan State. They're not putting on that football jersey again. They're not playing in a bowl game, and they'll have to get back into camp come springtime to see if they can fix things. But then I think the bigger question for them, as they sit at 0-8 in the conference, 3-8 on the year, the only team worse than them, Purdue, who is also 0-8 in the conference, but is 2-9 on the year. Do you fire Jonathan Smith, or do you let him stay and try and figure his things out? Do you move on from Aiden Giles? Where do you go in the transfer portal? How do you handle things in high school recruiting as you're bringing in freshmen? What are you going to do to change this program around? The Michigan State Spartans do not look good as a football team right now. It has not been good for them at all. In fact, let's take a look at their Iowa game a little bit closer. Alessio Milivojevic goes for 255 yards on 25 of 42, two touchdowns and an interception. Brendan Tullis had 56 rushing yards on 8 carries. Jack Velling had 88 receiving yards on 8 receptions. Then you had Quindarius Dunnigan with a sack, and Wayne Matthews III had 9 tackles, 7 of them being solo. Mark Gronkowski, 12 of 22, 1 touchdown, 1 interception for 147 passing yards. Kamari Moulton had 18 carries for 78 rushing yards. Reese Van Der Zee had 2 receptions for 46 yards. Ethan Herkert had had 1 sack. And then Carson Schaar had 10 tackles, 9 of them being solo. Michigan State outgained Iowa 335-301. 2 turnovers for Iowa to just 1 for Michigan State. 16 first downs for Iowa, 19 for Michigan State. 4 penalties for Iowa for 40 yards. Only 1 penalty for 10 yards for Michigan State. I'm not seeing where things went wrong. 4 for 15 on third down for Michigan State, but only 1 for 10 for Iowa. 0 for 1 on fourth down for each of these teams, and they were just about even on possession time. Things got started in this game with a Caden Wettjen 62-yard punt return touchdown. That's how the first points were put on the board in this game, with 3:38 left to go in the first quarter. Martin Connington then had a field goal to put the Spartans on the board in the second quarter. They were down 7-3 at halftime. Krishan McCary caught a 45-yard touchdown pass from Alessio Milivojevic to put the Spartans up 10-7. Then Christian McCary, again, a 5-yard touchdown from Alessio Milivojevic to put the Spartans up 10. Then Drew Stevens cashes in a 26. Spartans are up 17-7 after 3. Drew Stevens, a 26-yard field goal beginning of the fourth. Now the Hawkeyes down 7. Jacob Gill, a 13-yard touchdown reception from Mark Gronkowski, ties the game. And then Drew Stevens cashes in a field goal with just 2 seconds left to lift the Hawkeyes over the Spartans. That's what I mean when I say they kind of just have been shooting themselves in the foot all year and haven't been able to get things going for them. And they're going to have to make major changes on the flip side as they go into the offseason. Are you firing coordinators? Are you firing Jonathan Smith at the top? Are you trying to hang on to him because of what happened with Mel Tucker and you don't necessarily have the money to pay this guy out, so you got to ride it out until his contract is up? What is going to happen with the transfer portal? What is the attack for recruiting? Who's staying on this team, first off, of the players that are here? Who's leaving? Are you going back to Aiden Childs as a quarterback? There are tons of questions about what Michigan State is going to do and how they're going to fix this team. But I cannot tell you how those questions are going to be answered, because I don't have any of the answers, because I wouldn't even know where to begin to fix this team. And that's going to take us over to their arch rival, the Michigan Wolverines, which we won't talk a ton about what they have coming up later on this week, because we'll get into that for the college football playoff segment a little bit. And we'll also get into that for our picks. As we know, they take on the Ohio State Buckeyes, the number one team in the country, for the game during rivalry week. So we'll get into that a little bit later. But what happened last week, they took on Malik Washington in Maryland. Here's how it went down. Bryce Underwood, 16 to 23, 2 touchdowns for 215 yards. Bryson Kuzdahl had 100 rushing yards for 20 carries, 3 touchdowns. Andrew Marsh, 76 receiving yards, 5 receptions and a touchdown. Jayshon Barnum had 1 sack. Mason Curtis, 6 tackles for 2 of them solo. Malik Washington, 210 passing yards on 19 of 39 passing, 1 touchdown and 1 interception. Dewan Williams had 40 rushing yards on 12 carries. Shalik Knotts had 82 receiving yards on 4 receptions. Sidney Stewart had 1 sack. And Levain Scruggs, 8 tackles, 5 of them solo. Michigan outgains Maryland 443 to 347. 1 turnover for Maryland. 27 first downs for Michigan. 21 for Maryland. 4 of 30. 4 penalties, 30 yards for Michigan. 4 for 40 for Maryland. 12 of 14 on third down for Michigan. 5 of 14 on third down for Maryland. 2 of 4 on fourth down for Maryland. Dorian Fleming caught a touchdown pass to open things up for Maryland. Andrew Marsh caught one to tie things up for Michigan. Bryson Kuzdahl had a 2-yard touchdown run to put Michigan up 7. Donovan McCulley caught a 22-yard touchdown pass from Bryce Underwood to put Michigan up 14. Sean O'Hare had a field goal to knock it down to 11. Coming out of halftime, Bryson Kuzdahl, another 19-yard touchdown run. Sean O'Hare, another field goal. Bryson Kuzdahl, another 1-yard touchdown run. 35-13 after 3. Jasper Parker, a 6-yard touchdown run, 42-13. Dominic Zavada puts up a field goal, 45-13. And then Jalen Farouk had a touchdown pass at the end of the game, 45-20. And that is how Michigan was able to get it done. We'll talk more after the break, talking about the Red Wings with more Mid Madness on 95.3 WBCK. Welcome back into Mid Madness here on 95.3 WBCK. Now that we're back, it's time for us to take a few moments to talk about our favorite hockey team in the state, the Detroit Red Wings. They have currently dropped all the way back down to 5th in the Atlantic Division at 13-11-1. We'll look at the standings first. They're sitting at 15-7 and two overtime losses for 32 points is Tampa Bay in the one seed in the Atlantic Division. Montreal, 13-7-3, 29 points in second. Ottawa and Boston tied for 28 points for third place. Ottawa is 12-8-4. Boston is 14-12-0. Detroit, 13-11-1, sliding into that fifth place spot at 27. Florida, 12-11-1 for 25 points in sixth. Toronto, 10-10-3 for 23 points in seventh. And Buffalo, 9-11-4 for 22 points in eighth place. Most recently, the last time we talked, they were coming off a loss or a win against the Blue Jackets just after they had lost to the Islanders. They beat the Blue Jackets 4-3, and now they are currently on a three-game losing streak. They just dropped a game to the Devils 4-3 on the road. Then they came back home to Little Caesars Arena, dropped two games back-to-back to the Nashville Predators and the Tampa Bay Lightning, 6-3, 6-3. Their next game is going to be on the road. It says it will be played on ESPN+, but as we know, blackout rules apply for whatever reason to us, so we don't get to watch a lot of the Red Wings games living in Michigan or near Detroit, so it makes zero sense to me. But that game will be later tonight, 7 p.m. on ESPN. Plus, as they'll look to get at the Bruins, who currently sit just above them in that fifth place, or tied for third place with Ottawa with 28 points at 14-12. So this could be a pivotal game if they're able to go in and pick up a couple points, avoid an overtime game so that Boston doesn't pick up any points, and maybe they get some help with whoever Ottawa's playing this weekend, and they're able to jump ahead back into third place. But the Atlantic Division is going to be extremely, extremely messy this year. Looking over at the team leaders for just a moment, Dylan Larkin has 14 goals, three of them on the power play on 84 shots. Lucas Raymond has 19 assists on seven of them on the power play, and then he's got a plus-minus of five. Of course, Dylan Larkin still leads the team with 27 points, 14 goals, 13 assists, pretty much going one for one, averaging one goal for one assist. I mean, hey, the man likes to share just as much as he likes to eat. You can never complain about a guy that wants to help everybody get better while also continuing to work on his game as well. Looking at the goaltending, Cam Talbot, he's doing his thing consistently. 2.97 goals against average. He's let up 38 goals. He has a save percentage of .887 with 298 saves on 336 shots. He's got 9 wins on the year as well. The Red Wings are currently scoring 2.92 goals per game. They're giving up 3.33 goals per game, which is 25th in the league, 22.8% on the power play, which is 12th in the league, and then 80.9% on the penalty kill. They're tied for 14th. So they got to figure out a way to get the defense back open rolling and help Cam Talbot and these other goalies out as they continue to play, because you can look back. They had a 5-game win streak here where they beat the Maple Leafs twice, 6-3, 3-2, beat the Panthers 4-1, beat the Lightning 2-1, and then beat the Oilers 4-2. You know, you go out and lose to the Sabres 4-2, then the Islanders 7-2. But then you bounce back right after that. You beat the Blues 6-4. Then you beat the Blues 5-2. And then you beat the Kings 4-3 before dropping another one. Then you won again against the Sharks before going on a little bit of a losing streak. This team is streaky. It's very clear that the Red Wings are a streaky team at the moment. They haven't been able to lock down their style of play that is going to help them be successful on a consistent basis. Now, the good thing about streaky teams is once they do lock it in, they tend to not be so streaky. Like, once they figure out what it is about them that makes them lose games in a row and what it is about them that makes them win games in a row, they tend to follow what helps them win. They tend to be able to grasp hold of that concept and run with it. We saw the Red Wings do it a couple years ago when they almost snuck into the playoffs. They have been streaky that entire season. And then they were like, okay, hold on. Our young talent, getting out and just scoring as many goals as we can, and then really emphasizing our back check is what got us successful earlier in the season. That's how we were winning bunches of games in a row. How about we go back to that as we try and win bunches of games here at the end to squeeze into the playoffs? And it worked. They were out there winning and winning and winning and winning, and we're almost in the playoffs before things were stolen from them just at the end of the season. So I have a lot of faith in this Red Wings team and the fact that we've seen them at the top of the Atlantic Division multiple times this season already. Multiple times this season already, we have seen them at the top of that Atlantic Division. So we know that they have the skills to be the best team in this division. We know they have the skills to make a playoff, to be a playoff team this year. We know that they have the skills to at least be a wild card team. We also have seen them go on 5-game win streaks throughout this year. Another 3-game win streak right here. 2 wins in a row. Here's a couple wins here and there, right? We've seen them go on losing streaks. Here's 3 in a row. There's another 3 in a row. There's 2 in a row. You know what? I don't think we've seen them. They have not lost more than 2 games or more than 3 games in a row. So the fact that they play the Bruins tonight is a big deal, because if they go out and they win this game, they're on pace to continue not losing more than 3 games in a row. That's a pretty solid pace, although you don't really want to lose more than 2 in a row. Really, you don't want to lose more than 1 game in a row. You want to be able to bounce back after an L, make those changes, and go in and win the next game. My challenge and my thought for the Red Wings, as I have a lot of faith and trust in them, is to get into your film, get into your locker room, get into each other, look and look and detail everything. Do your research and find out what it is about your team on the ice, what it is about your team off the ice, what it is about the two together / separate that brings you success, and then implement all of those things across the board on a consistent basis. That is what you need in order to be successful, is you have to be able to play the same kind of hockey on a regular basis. I mean, 3-4 times a week, you got to be playing regular, like your brand of hockey. What is the Detroit Red Wings brand of hockey now? And I'm not sure that they know. I'm not sure that the fans know. I certainly don't know. And I'm not saying that as if I know everything and all of that. But the Lions, for example, they're a gritty team that wants to come out and take chances and win games and gamble and play with house money, because that's the kind of team they are. The Detroit Pistons wants to come out, use their skill, athleticism, and their youngness to run up and down the floor with you, cause you to make turnovers as you're tired, and then get easy buckets in transition or hand it off to their guy Cade and then work around him. That's the kind of team they are. The Red Wings have to figure out what kind of team they are if they want to be successful throughout the rest of this season, so that they can tap into that on a consistent basis and give themselves the successful results they're looking for on a consistent basis. This game against the Bruins is huge. If they go on a 4-5-6 game losing streak at this moment in the season, it could be pivotal, as you never want to fall too far behind before the All-Star break. That's what caught them up a couple years ago, was they came out of the All-Star break playing amazing hockey, but it had already been too late. You don't want to wait too long before you kick it into gear. They need to figure it out before the All-Star break. Now is a good time to hopefully go in and get a key win on the road against a team in your division that is slightly above you, so you can move up in the ranks. But you got to find out what it is about your team and your locker room on the ice and off the ice that brings you success. We're going to talk more about the Red Wings next week when we get a chance to dive into them again. Good luck against the Bruins. But when we come back, we're going to be talking about our Pistons with More Men Madness on 95.3 WBCK.
95.3 WBCK. 95.3 WBCK.
Welcome back into Mid Madness here on 95.3 WBCK. Now that we're back from the break, it's time for us to talk about our Detroit Pistons. They were on a 13-game winning streak, and yes, you just heard those words right. It was were, because it is no longer a thing. But we're going to go all the way back to the beginning of that win streak and how things got popped off for them. They beat the Magic 135-116. Then they beat the Mavericks 122-110. Neutral site, Mexico City game. down in Mexico City. Then they beat the Grizzlies 114-106, beat the Jazz 114-103, beat the Nets 125-107, beat the 76ers 111-108, beat the Wizards 137-135, beat the Bulls 124-113, the 76ers 114-105, the Pacers 127-112, the Hawks 120-112, the Bucks 129-116, the Pacers 122-117, and then they finally had another loss to the Celtics in NBA Cup play the other night, 117-114. Before we dive a little bit deeper into that game and talk about how things ended up falling apart for the Pistons in that game, and they weren't able to come out victorious as many of us thought that they would have been able to, we're going to look at the team leaders first. Cade Cunningham, 28.1 points per game on 44.5% shooting from the field, 36.3 minutes per game. He's also got 9.3 assists with just 3.6 turnovers. Jalen Duren shooting 65.5% from the field, putting in 19.8 points per game in 29 minutes. Defensively, Jalen Duren leads the team in rebounds at 11.8, 7.4 of them on the defensive glass, 4.4 on the offensive glass. Ron Holland, 1.8 steals per game in 22.2 minutes. He's got only 1.6 turnovers. And Isaiah Stewart at 1.9 blocks per game is 0.2 steals and 6.3 rebounds. The team is pouring in 119.3 points per game, rebounds at 46.4 per game, and assisting 26.6% times per game. Bobby Klitman is now the only injury on the team, which has posed a little bit of a threat. We'll dive into that in just a moment as well. But first, we're going to talk about the standings across the league. First, Oklahoma City Thunder sit at the top at 18-1. Your Pistons are still second at 15-3, 2.5 games back. Los Angeles Lakers are 13-4, 4 games back from the lead. So are the Nuggets, 4 games back. And Houston Rockets, 4.5 games back at 12-4. Toronto, four games back as well at 14-5. Looking at the conference, the Pistons are the number one seed in the Eastern Conference at 15-3, 1.5 games above the Raptors at 14-5. The Heat are 13-6. The Knicks are 11-6. The Cavs are 12-7. And the Hawks are 11-8. To wrap up your top six that are currently playoff teams, if it started today, the Orlando Magic, the Boston Celtics, Chicago Bulls, and Philadelphia 76ers would be your 7-10 play-in teams in the East. Meanwhile, the Thunder, Lakers, Nuggets, Rockets, Spurs, and Suns 1-6 in that order would be your playoff teams out West. Minnesota, Golden State, Portland, Memphis are your 7-10 playoff teams out West at the moment. Currently missing out on the playoffs, the Bucks, Hornets, Nets, Wizards, and Pacers in the East. The Jazz, Clippers, Kings, Mavericks, and Pelicans in the West. Looking at the division, Pistons hold on to a comfortable lead at 3.5 games over the Cavs, 5.5 games over the Bulls, 7.5 over the Bucks, and 13 over the Pacers. 9-1 in the last 10 for the Pistons. But now that we kind of talked about that, we're going to talk about what happened the other night in group play for the Pistons. Wednesday night, Cade Cunningham does what he does. 42 points on the game, 12 of 26 from the field, 14 of 16 from the free throw line. Keep that number in mind. Jaylen Brown had 33 points, 12 of 32, 7 of 8 from the free throw line to lead the Celtics in points. He also had 10 rebounds, 7 on the defensive end, 3 on the offensive end for a double-double. Jalen Duren, 10 rebounds on the defensive end, 6 on the offensive glass, 16 total. Jaylen Brown, 5 assists with 5 turnovers in 34 minutes. Cade Cunningham, 5 assists, 4 turnovers, 36 minutes. 40% from the field for the Pistons, 44 for the Celtics, 31 from the three-point line was Detroit, 47 for the Celtics, 13 turnovers apiece. Pistons out-rebounded the Celtics 56-44. This game was all over the place in win probability as Pistons were able to get as high as almost 80% in this game. And then obviously at one point it was 81.5% for Boston. So this game went back and forth throughout the game. There were multiple times that it looked like the Pistons might have been able to pull away. It looked like the Celtics were going to pull away multiple times, but it ended up staying close, almost went to overtime. But a big, big problem for them ended up being late in this game in the fourth quarter, as the game was just about tied. No, sorry. The Pistons were down three. They call a foul. They call it on the ground. And Cade's like, nah, man, I'm shooting. I was in shooting form. You got to give me that because I was shooting. I need three free throws. And you will never, ever believe what happened. They went to the monitor. They initiated the review. And they overturned the call. Cade Cunningham is going to the line. Three free throws, a chance to tie the game with 4.4 seconds left. He makes free throw number one. He makes free throw number two. Peyton Pritchard checks in for Anthony Simmons. Amari Williams comes in for Josh Minot. Isaiah Stewart comes in for Caris LeVert. Isaiah Thompson in for Duncan Robinson. And then Cade Cunningham missed the third free throw. Peyton Richard comes down with the rebound. Isaiah Thompson fouls him. Pritchard makes the first free throw. LeVert and Robinson come back in. Pritchard makes the second. Celtics are back up three. Jalen Duren threw a bad pass that Jordan Walsh ended up stealing. And that ended up being the end of the game, 117-114. That is how our beloved Pistons game or winning streak ended up coming to an end. Was an unfortunate event where Cade Cunningham missed a free throw late in the game that I'm sure he will not be forgetting anytime soon. He's going to hang on to that for quite some time. And it ended up putting him in a spot where the Pistons ended up losing by three, and that's something he'll hang on to as a star player for this team that looks like an MVP candidate early on in the season, looks to be the best point guard in the Eastern Conference. But in the same token, he had 42 points in this game, and he had five assists. Like, what more could you ask for from Cade Cunningham? Where was his help? Everybody else has to step up. I'm going to pop over to this box score for just a moment as we look at this game. You know, you get 12 from Duren, 11 from Duncan Robinson, 12 from Tobias, only 8 from Isaiah Thompson, and then the bench was atrocious. Javonte Green gives you nothing. Jaden Ivey only gives you 7. Danis Jenkins gives you nothing. Caris LeVert gives you 10, and then you get 6 apiece from Ron Holland and Isaiah Stewart. You need better production from your bench if you're going to go out and win games. You can't score 29 points from your bench and think you're going to win a game, regardless of how many points you get from your starters. You're going to need better play from your bench, and that is what it ended up giving the Pistons a real problem in this game, is they didn't get the bench play that they needed. They shot 40%, 31%, 81%. Those are good enough splits to win any game, especially when your opponent is only shooting 44, 47, 88. They didn't shoot that much better than you. That's why they only beat you by three, but you gave them plenty of opportunities. Free throw shooting, 2 missed by Jalen Duren, 2 missed by Cade Cunningham, 1 missed by Isaiah Thompson, 2 missed by Isaiah Stewart. There's the game right there. You make all your free throws, you win this game. How many free throws did they miss? 1 by Hugo Gonzalez, 1 by Amari Williams, and 1 by Jaylen Brown. They made every single other free throw that they put up in this game. That is the difference in this game, was they went out and made free throws and the Pistons did not. I don't think it's a huge thing to harp on, not something that they need to worry about in a huge manner. They can go out and they played last night against the Magic, which, as I'm recording this on Friday, you know that I don't have the result of that. That is NBA Cup play, a chance for them to go 3-1 in NBA Cup group play. And hopefully they're able to advance and kind of play for that NBA Cup. It would be amazing to see the Pistons play for that NBA Cup and maybe win it. That would be awesome, too. Granted, they're going to have to beat the Thunder, who are on an absolute roll right now as well. But I would love to see them go to the NBA Cup and win it. So that's something to keep their eyes on as well. Looking at their schedule, we're not going to talk a ton about their next game because that is going to come up in our picks later on in the show. So that's against the Heat. But they do play Atlanta on Monday before we speak again, 7 p.m. at LCA. They're on the road against Milwaukee at FiServ Forum Wednesday, December 3rd, 8 p.m. And then Friday, December 5th, they'll play 7:30 p.m. against the Portland Trail Blazers. And then I'll catch you up again on what's happening on the flip side of that. But, man, that streak was amazing. I mean, however you want to put it, it was good to see. It was fun to watch. That is what this team needed. They needed to see that success. They needed to feel that success, to know that they can play at that level, to know that they have the success, a successful roster built, to know that being young doesn't mean they can't play good basketball. This team's young, but they're skilled. This team's young, but they're ready. This team's young, but they're hungry. This team wants to win for the fans of Detroit, and you can see it in the way they go out and play basketball. Cade Cunningham is going to be a different monster coming out of this game because he lost, because of that free throw. Sure, it's not just because of that free throw. As I just mentioned, some of the other things that happened throughout this game that he has to kind of keep in his head, but that's going to be in the back of his head was, man, if I would have made that free throw, this game could have turned out totally different for us, and that is something that's going to bug him. So he's going to get in the gym, he's going to get better, and we're going to continue to see success from this Pistons team. The last time the Pistons won 13 games in a row was 2003-2004. And the last time before that they won 13 games in a row, 89-90. What is the difference, or what do we know about 89-90 and 2003-4? They won championships in both those years. So I'm cool with a 13-game win streak if it means the Pistons are about to win a championship. But we'll talk more about the Pistons next week. When we come back from the break, we'll be talking Michigan and Michigan State basketball on the hardwood with more Mid-Madness on 95.3 WBC.